New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to episode 84 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, let's start here. Is Trevor playing on Sunday?
I can definitively say, honestly, I don't know. I don't think Doug Peterson is BSing when he said today that it could be like a game time decision, you know? They might not know until like 90 minutes before. I think he's definitely traveling, which I'm not sure if he would have last week. Like he already would have been ruled out last week, you know? Right. So it definitely seems like he's traveling this week. So I don't know. Like what I saw in practice today, he was attempting a couple longer throws, a couple yards, like 30 yard passes or so. He asked me if the timing looked off, and I'm like, man, the staff member's catching the ball. I'm not gonna question timing. I will say, I don't know, the ball was, I felt like coming out of his hand was a little bit different, but I think any quarterback, they suffer a throwing shoulder injury, they're gonna compensate, you know, with their motion or whatever, even if it's subconsciously. So that's not too surprising. I'd say you going to make me take a stance, yes or no?
Absolutely. Okay. You got to give me a percentage, even if it's 51-49 one way or another.
Yes, he starts.
It could be 50-50, I guess.
Yes, he starts 55-45.
Okay. I was thinking, yes, he starts 60-40. Because I haven't really taken anything from what Doug has said, because I feel like you never really can. And then, like, I haven't really taken anything from the practice field, because media is only out there for so long, and it's always the beginning of practice. And I don't know, there's definitely a lot of unknowns behind the scenes. But I think the fact that he is traveling with the team, and specifically a game time decision, is not small news at all. Because, I mean, every time that, like, we've talked about this, and he's, like, been injured, and then the next week he has a chance to play the game. He's like every time except last week, he's been a game time decision, and then he ends up playing. And then last week he was ruled out on Friday. And so I just think, I don't know, maybe it's too small of a sample size and you can't really take anything away from it. But history says that if he's a game time decision, he's going to play.
Yeah, no, I think you made a good point with the practice time. Like, for the record, we are not out there very long at all. It's like 15, 20 minutes maybe. So, like, he could literally, you know, be playing with marbles and, like, on the sideline if he wanted to, just kicking his feet in the air. And then when we leave, you know, maybe he throws a ton. You know, like, we just do not know. So, I think that's definitely a good point. You know, like, yesterday, I think the line moved, like, 2 points, 3 points yesterday, didn't it? Like,
towards, yeah, I was going to say 2.5.
And I think some of that was because Ian Rappaport had a report slash like opinion that he didn't think it looked good for him to play. Like, again, it didn't feel like a report. Like, Rappaport had the same kind of bit a few weeks ago when he said he wasn't going to play. He didn't think he would play, like, when he had the concussion. But I know a lot of people are wondering, why is the line moving if there are videos of him throwing at practice? When, like, what you get from us at practice is, like, extremely limited, and it really shouldn't move much at all. Like, my opinion on whether Trevor plays or not is not based much on what I saw from him today, because there's just not really a ton to glean from it other than seems like they have a good time. I'll say that they were in good spirits today, like on the practice field, in the locker room. It felt like, I wouldn't say loose, but they're not like, you know, a Tet Hut at attention, like, you know, super tense or anything like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely times where you can, like, either the locker room or the practice field kind of, like, feel the tension around you. So I think that's a viable report.
Yeah, it definitely felt more positive. I'll say that. Like, even being on the practice field, like, before the Tampa Bay game, it didn't feel, like, as positive and, I guess, good energy as it did today.
So I know we just said that the media isn't on the practice field very long, but have you noticed anything different either this week or last compared to the rest of the practices?
Music choices?
I feel like that could actually have a little psychological impact.
I really just don't think you can glean a lot from like in-season. Like in-season practices are basically for you to say who's on the practice field and who isn't. Like for media, you know, that is to me as much as you can really get. But I will say it definitely seemed like that win against the Panthers, just like the overall mood in the air, definitely helped them kind of, you know, let a sigh out a little bit, you know, breathe right. A little bit.
Yeah, I guess my question definitely would have been better for like a coach or a player, but I'm just interested in if they actually like changed something specific in their practice routine, or if the only thing that changed was like the coach is yelling at players a little bit harder and then the players working a little bit harder because of that.
It's okay. I get confused for a coach or a player all the time. I perfectly understand why you would send that question my way. Now, I mean, I thought Josh Allen last week saying it was their best week of prep all week was interesting. And like I said, it probably is something like they can talk to better. But I'd imagine when they say those things, it's like attention to detail or, you know, like stuff like that, like the little things, like guys aren't jumping off sides during special teams, drills, etc. Guys aren't dropping passes on air, that kind of stuff. So, again, it's not really stuff that we can see per se, but what we could see and what we could kind of gauge, it definitely feels like they're at least in good spirits, like as opposed to, I think if this game was last week, I think it'd be a very different feel, you know, because, I mean, even going into that Panthers game, things still felt a little bit tense, wouldn't you say?
Oh, totally. I mean, they were on a 4-game losing skid, so of course things felt a little bit tense. How would you say the vibe is around the receiver room specifically? Because we just talked about Trevor and the offensive line injuries. Looks like Walker Little and Ezra Cleveland are pretty much a full go for Sunday. And so really the question marks that remain in terms of the injury report for Jacksonville is Zay Jones and Christian Kirk.
My prediction on Christian Kirk is – tomorrow afternoon, you see him activated and placed on the active roster, and Jamal Agnew is placed on injured reserve. But he either doesn't play or he plays very sparingly. And then he comes back 100% the next week. Like he even said, like, his first day of practice this week was basically like a recovery day, like get out there and like finally move around. I feel like he's done very little, like, game plan specific and football specific stuff probably this week. So I'm just not entirely sold that, like, his recovery has been amazing. Like, it's normally like a 6 to 7, you know, 8 week injury. And he even said the other day, like, he had a right, like, abductor tear, like week 6, and he had been playing through it for like a month and a half.
That was high key the biggest news of the week. It was crazy that he kind of spilled the beans on that.
I was surprised that Mike Flores didn't jump all over that. He's only known as Mike Flores. Did you notice that?
That's such a Mike Flores move. He writes about the dumbest stuff.
Did you notice that they had to add Trevor's finger to the injury report? Because he said he got like something like lanced off, so he had a band-aid around it. But because he got asked about it in the press conference, they had to add it to the press report. I mean, to the injury report, because, you know. Yeah. God knows, Mike Flores says he sees a band-aid in that finger and it's not on the injury report. He's going to sniff it out. He's the hero we don't deserve. Right. But back to the receivers, it does seem like Zay Jones is going to play at least, which I think, regardless of who plays at quarterback, that's probably like a plus. You know, like CJ Beathard last week basically just threw it to Calvin Ridley and Evan Ingram. So if Beathard was to play this week, I think having Jones back in the lineup is significant, especially with how bad they were in the red zone, you know, last week, and how bad they've been in that, you know, really since, I'd say, the Cincinnati Bengals game. On the flip side, for as useless as much of what we get from Peterson in press conferences is, he did make one interesting point, I thought, today when somebody asked about, you know, you're getting Jones back eventually, pretty soon you're going to get Trevor and Kirk back for sure. You're going to have your full offense out there again. He was like, yeah, it's a good thing. You're getting playoffs. You're getting your best players. But he also said, like, the drawback is they just haven't played in a while. And, like, the timing and rhythm and all stuff like that, it could potentially be affected by that. I never really thought of it like that. But, I mean, I think it's a potential, you know, factor.
Totally. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I feel like even at the beginning of the season, we saw that a lot where the timing and the chemistry wasn't totally there between the quarterback and the pass catchers. And so, I mean, Evan Engram has been pretty consistent all season, and then Ridley has kind of rounded into form as the only healthy starting receiver, really, for Jacksonville this season. But I thought Doug also said today that he would expect Zay Jones to be out there on game day, which I thought was another, like, telling quote, because usually Doug is, like, very much keep things under wraps kind of coach speak at his press conferences. But to, like, just blatantly say I expect him to be out there on game day is, I feel like, as pointing of a statement as he could have delivered.
And then he's listed questionable.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I would expect Zay to play, though. Christian, I was thinking he would not be activated and not play. And then I wouldn't have been surprised if he was activated and didn't play. But I kind of like what you're saying, where he's activated and technically is active on Sunday, but then, like, is really just an emergency option. I think that makes sense with Zay coming back from injury and then Jamal going to be on injured reserve.
That's the entire reason I think you haven't seen Agnew place on IR yet. They're just waiting for Christian Kirk to, you know, just take his spot. So if you had somebody else replace Jamal Agnew's spot, then you have to make a spot when Kirk comes back. So I definitely agree. So the last time the Jags played the Titans, Doug Peterson kind of owns the Titans, dude. They've outscored them. They averaged 30 points per game against the Titans, and the second and the fourth highest scoring games of the Peterson era have come against the Titans, you know, earlier this year and then obviously last year on the road. Probably Trevor's best, like, in terms of, like, the production and the touchdowns, et cetera, yards everybody wants to see. Trevor against the Titans last year in Nashville is probably, like, as good as you're going to get.
Right.
How do you think they match up with this specific Titans team? Just knowing what we saw earlier in the year, it felt like the Jaguars kind of toyed with them early. Like, that was definitely the offense's best game of the year, I think. I know it was for sure by EPA. I think you said it was Lawrence's best game ever in terms of total EPA generated.
Sounds like something I would say.
It does sound like something I would say.
I think they match up really well. I think more so on the defense, which is probably mostly just because of the injuries on offense. Like, it's tough to say how the Jaguars match up when we don't really know what the starting quarterback and receiver situation is going to be. But the Titans have been kind of burned through the air all season by wideouts specifically. They've allowed the third most receptions and the sixth most yards to wide receivers on the season. And so, like, Calvin Ridley week. I'm not sure, like, how productive Zay Jones is actually going to be, but he definitely makes a big difference when he's on the field. For passing plays specifically, they would rank 16th on offense for passing plays with Zay Jones on the field at negative 0.01 EPA per play. And with him off the field, they'd be 21st, negative 0.08 EPA per play. So it's not a major bump, but it is a bump. And I don't know how much of a factor he'll really be in his first game back, but, I mean, he's definitely better than whoever would start above him. And I think that he could also
be
a true, like, decoy for Ridley on certain routes.
Yeah, that to me is the big thing with Zay Jones is I'm not sure really what you could expect, but at the very least, it's more than having, you know, respectfully, Tim Jones or Elijah Cooks probably out there, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, honestly, even maybe his – I want to give credit to you. You've made this point before, Zay Jones as a blocker. I think that's personally the biggest reason Elijah Cooks doesn't play much, in my opinion, is because he's both – in terms of execution and kind of just what we can see on film, kind of knowing what to do. I think the Tampa game especially, I think his blocking is a big thing. And Zay, you've mentioned it before, is their best blocking receiver by a mile. So you maybe see more of an impact from him in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for the running game, really the key is to avoid the edges, because with Jeffrey Simmons out for the Titans, he's been on injured reserve since, I think, Christmas Eve. Tennessee is actually a little bit susceptible to runs up the middle. And so it'll be a big Luke Fortner showing to see if he can, like, kind of take advantage of a Titans front that doesn't have Jeffrey Simmons of it in it. And so I think you can, like, run right up the gap against the Titans a little bit and then run, like, way outside the edges on, like, pitches and reverses and try to get way outside, because the Titans corners are just not really good in general against the pass and the run. But, like, really, you got to avoid the edges between Danico Autry, who's been one of the best run and pass rushing, run stopping and pass rushing defensive ends in football since he's been on Tennessee's roster. And then Arden Key, who has, like, probably maybe not more than any Jaguars, but for the Titans, I feel like he's got to have the most motivation on that team to have a big performance against the Jags. And then Harold Landry has been kind of nicked up by injuries over the past year or two, after he was kind of like an ascending young star outside linebacker. But those three are, like, kind of like the big names for Tennessee's defense. And so I don't think Jacksonville can really try to run zone or gap schemes, either one, like to the C gap, trying to get at the defensive edges. I think they got to go either right up the gut or way outside.
I'll be honest with you. I kind of think going outside is the move against the Titans defense. And the reason why is, I just feel like they're not a fast defense. You know, like, they're not maybe some of the past Mike Vrabel defenses we've seen. And I feel like if you can get the edge on them, like, if you go back, the Titans game is one of the few games where, like, the Kevin Ridley in the rounds worked. You know, yeah. Dearness Johnson made some plays outside, Travis Etienne did. So I kind of feel like offensively that should, you know, be like kind of out athlete them a little bit, because especially with, you know, but I think you make a good point. No Jeffrey Simmons is huge. I think you can at least try to establish the running game a bit more. I remember that first game, there was like a third and short or a fourth and short, and he absolutely schooled Anton Harrison on his way to getting the stop. Him being out is huge. And I've had a lot of people express surprise at the fact that he's on IR. It shows you nobody pays attention to Tennessee this year. Like, he has not been set to be a factor for some time. So Calvin Ridley, you mentioned Calvin Ridley week, his best game as a Jaguar, probably this, like, I'd say what the first Titans game and what the Buffalo Bills game.
I was going to say the Bills game. I feel like there was one other game where he had over 100 yards or maybe close to it. But so I would say, like, it's the Titans game was definitely a top three game for him this season, for sure.
And I think it's because, like, you saw Juju Brents with, with the Colts a few weeks ago, said Calvin Ridley was his toughest cover so far this year, because one-on-one, just the things he can do. I feel like when you're going against young slash inexperienced slash maybe not very good corners like Tennessee has, that's the kind of game where Ridley kind of can just potentially have a monster day. So 10.5 targets. You're taking the over or under for Ridley this week? Yeah, that's right. Crank it up.
I'm going under for that, because I think Jacksonville will be kind of like what they did both last week against the Panthers and then earlier in the season against the Titans, where they're able to just kind of jump to an early lead and almost coast for the rest of the game. So I'm not expecting, like, huge passing production out of Jacksonville this week, regardless of who starts at quarterback. But you better believe I still have Calvin Ridley's over for receiving down for the props later.
I kind of want to go over. I'll be honest. I feel like he gets absolutely fed. Targets. Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to catch them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to be completed. But, No, you can't. Maybe, like, that could be, like, even them throwing 21 times. I think he'd get, like, a little. I think he's going to get absolutely fed this week. And I'm prepared to potentially be wrong, but doesn't happen very often.
I think the things working against him this week is, A, the quarterbacks, because even if Trevor does start, then, like, I feel like it's going to be a lot of quick game, a lot of screens. Just, like, I mean, for either quarterback, the game plan is probably going to be fairly similar to what we saw last week against the Panthers, where the quarterback is averaging about 2 seconds after the snap to throw.
That's and fair.
Ridley definitely can catch short routes or short passes, but he's more of a threat and more productive in like more the intermediate range.
Do you think the game plan is any different with Lawrence versus Beathard if they're in? Like, do you think if Lawrence is in, he's slinging it as opposed to Beathard kind of doing what he did last week? Or do you think maybe they play it conservatively either way? Like, just how do you kind of
– what's your feel? I think they play conservatively either way, because even if, like, Lawrence has, like, full capacity in his arm and is able to let it rip, I think Jacksonville's coaches are still going to try to, like, kind of, like, calm him down a little bit just for the sake of him not getting hit and not, like, further aggravating the injury with – the playoffs probably on deck. So I think it's going to be a pretty similar game plan regardless.
Be a Saints type of game plan, you think, probably?
For sure. I was going to say earlier, when you mentioned the Ridley reverse, like 100%, bet the mortgage on Ridley getting at least one carry.
I that's a good one. I like that. I should have had that. I like that. That's a good call, because it definitely feels like that kind of week where they're going to pull out the stops. Like, cause, I mean, you have a lot to lose, you know, as opposed to Tennessee, who has nothing to lose. Like, Jacksonville has everything to lose. So I agree. I think they're going to do their very best to, like, keep Trevor or Beathard on a short leash, because in my mind, if I had to guess, they're probably thinking, as long as we don't turn the ball over, they should win this game, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But at the same time, like, I feel like it's going to be, like, kind of a gadgety game plan, and some of the gadget plays have led to turnovers or at least kind of like big losses. So it'll be interesting to see, because I kind of feel like this is a Press Taylor game, because like they're gonna have to do a good job coordinating, but at the same time, like, not try to get so cute that it leads to mistakes. So Calvin Ridley game and Press Taylor game.
That's your guy. Not Calvin. Not Calvin Press. You proclaim for him to be my guy, and then you just come up here, get on your pedestal, and say it's going to be a Press Taylor game.
I didn't say anything good about it. I guess a Press Taylor game indicates good, because like that's the way that we talk about it in the weeks.
I never thought I would hear it's going to be a Press Taylor game.
I meant like Press Taylor's play calling will be a major thing to watch. That's what I meant by a Press Taylor game. Like,
fair enough.
He's going to have a big role in the outcome of Week 18.
I agree with that 100%. Gus, you got any other takes on Jags offense versus Titans defense before we cut for a break?
No, let's get to defense.
All right. We're back, ready to break down the battle everybody has anticipated for 17 long weeks. Ryan Tannehill, Mike Caldwell, the immovable object, the unstoppable force. Who you got?
Mike Caldwell, man, come on.
Yeah.
I'm definitely way more of a Mike Caldwell guy than Press Taylor guy. I know I look exactly like Press Taylor. There was literally like a photo in the past week or two of Press Taylor in the coach's box upstairs calling plays, and I like thought it was me for a second. It's kind of uncanny at specific angles.
Dude, I had literally said this for years since he got hired.
Yeah.
And I have been brushed aside many a times. I'm glad that you're finally how old are you?
24, about to turn 25.
Okay. I'd say I'd like to know where he was 26 years ago, but I don't think he's that old. Like, he's obviously older than 26, but I don't want to say. I want to know what a 9-year-old Press Taylor was doing.
I'm also one of those kids that looks exactly like their parents, so I've known for a long time that I'm not adopted and just a long lost Taylor brother.
Good point. Good point. One of the many. All right, Gus. Jags defense versus Titans offense. Yeah, go ahead and segue past the Gus versus Taylor paternity suit.
Kids that looks like their parents.
One of the many kids that look like their parents. Yeah. You sure look like those two people that made you, Gus.
All right, what's the matchup that's got your eye this week?
I want to give a game ball to whoever looks most like their parents. okay, so that was last bit I had to get out there. Man, that's tough. Devin Lloyd had, I thought, his best probably career game in week 11 against the Titans. Like, take out all the takeaways he had last year. Some of them, you know, they kind of lucked into. He was kind of all over the place in week 11. And he met Henry a couple times in the hole. So I'd say Henry versus Lloyd will be a big one. Hopkins, obviously, versus Campbell and Williams. And that's, I'd say, probably the matchup of the game. But just overall, how the Jaguars can make Ryan Tannehill uncomfortable. I'll be honest. I think the Jaguars would have a better shot. And I'm not saying they have, oh, Christ, Ryan Tannehill's playing, they're screwed. But I think Will Levis playing would increase the Jaguars' probability to win as opposed to Ryan Tannehill. Just because I don't think Tannehill's going to make, like, many mistakes because he doesn't really do anything at this point of his career. Of, like, the 35 quarterbacks with 25 dropbacks the last 2 weeks, he is the second lowest average after target at 4.4 yards. Like, he's like, barely playing the position. You know, he's more or less doing extended handoffs. So that's my thing is I'm just not – I think they're going to punt a lot, but I'm not sure how often he's going to put the ball in harm's way, whereas – Will Levis was, like, barely taking snaps and handing off correctly last time these two teams played.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth because, like you said, like, Tannehill is barely playing the position. But I think if it was, like, a midseason game, like, week 11, then Levis would give you a better chance to win or win in general. But, like, since this game is essentially a playoff game and I feel like it can get, like, pretty gritty and low scoring, I think having a quarterback that's not going to turn the ball over is going to be good for you. Because I think, yeah, like, as you said, Levis had an aborted snap back in week 11 against the Jags. And so just having someone that can take care of the football, I feel like Tannehill has had actually his fair share of turnovers against the Jaguars, whether it be interceptions or strip sacks. But yeah, I still think, like, I'd rather go with a veteran than a rookie for a game as important as this one.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I'd agree with that. I think Tannehill probably has, you know, had his fair
share.
You just
said you would go with Levis over Tannehill.
No, I'm saying that I see your point that Tannehill's had his fair share of turnovers. I don't agree. I agree with the bad word. I don't agree with you at all. No.
You said 100%. I was like, where are you on this one? You're back on the top of the fence again.
Fair enough. Okay, give me a stat line. Give me a stat line you expect.
Oh, I have so many stats. Okay. All right. I think the biggest one is that Josh Allen is going on the right. He's almost always on the right side of the line, which means he's going against left tackles. He's a right outside linebacker going against left tackles. And Tennessee will be starting sixth-round rookie Jalen Duncan, who ranks dead last in PFF pass block grade among 90 qualifying offensive tackles this season. He also ranks last in pass blocking grade on, like, true pass blocking sets. I know you like that split. So he's allowed 9 sacks, which is tied for fourth most among all offensive linemen. And he's only started 5 games this season.
I was going to say he's barely played.
Yeah, he has played in 10 games. So he's definitely had to, like, be in relief a few times. But Tennessee's offensive line was, like, pretty bad to start the year. And then they had a bunch of injuries. So now they've got this 6th-round rookie who, by PFF's grading, is the worst offensive tackle. So, I mean, I feel like Josh Allen already had plenty of motivation this week to get his team to the playoffs, get one step closer to the Super Bowl, maybe, like, try to lead the league in sacks because he's only half sack back currently. But, like, it's just set up really well for Josh Allen going against this left tackle.
That's a good point. I think the Titans' offensive line in general, it's like a complete mess. You know, like, I think there's chances for the Jaguars. Like, that was the big thing they did in week 11 was they took away Henry on early downs. It was back when the Jaguars were, you know, still doing that. And they were able, like, to force Tennessee into a lot of, you know, third and longs. The Jags only missed 3 tackles that entire game, which is absolutely bonkers, you know, for an NFL game. I believe it's the lowest of the Caldwell/Peterson era. To me, if they can do that, that's where I see, you know, their big chance to take this game over. And like I said, if you don't turn the ball over, I think you have a good chance because I expect, or at least would think, their front would have an advantage over the Titans offensive line. I don't think the Jaguars have like a great defensive front or anything, but they do have some good players along there. And we've seen kind of week after week, like the Titans offensive line, just like get hammered, you know, like it, I don't think Henry's lost as much of a step as people probably think. I just think their line has regressed that badly over the years. And it's come to a, you know, a peak this year where it's probably the worst that they've had his entire career.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think he's definitely still got some juice left in the engine. But, I mean, it's definitely a mismatch for the Titans in general. But I think especially in, like, their base offense, which is 12 personnel, and then that gets the Jaguars into their base defense, which is a 3-4. We talked about how the Jags aren't really as well equipped to stop the run when they have just two defensive tackles on the field. And we saw Carolina last week have a decent amount of success on the ground, or I guess just a little bit of success on the ground because they were in a negative game script the whole time, so they had to pass a lot. But whenever they were in 11 personnel, Chuba Hubbard was able to get a couple of first downs. But fortunately for the Jags, like I said, Tennessee, their base offense is 12 with two tight ends on the field, and they run it at the fifth highest rate in the league. And against – let me find the stat – against running back runs out of 12 personnel this season, Jacksonville's defense ranks top two in yards allowed, yards per carry allowed, first down rate allowed, EPA per play allowed, and success rate allowed.
That's crazy. Like it's literally like the thing the Jaguars this year have done best. Yeah, and that's even factoring in the fact that the 49ers had a ton of success in 12 personnel. So even like factoring that debacle performance in, like the Jags right. obviously still grayed out that well. That to me is probably the big key to the game. I don't know how else the Titans enter into this game other than saying, let's just smash it. Hope Derrick Henry does something, take shots to DeAndre Hopkins. But I think that's kind of what the Jaguars need too. Like I feel even especially, I mean, with the chance that C.J. Beathard plays, the Jaguars would probably love if this was like a ground-and-pound game from the opposing team because it's not like they're going to have to, you know, be airing it out every drive to come back.
Yeah, I agree with you there, where I think the Titans, like, their game plan is going to be ground-and-pound because, like, it's not like they really have enough capable receivers to get into 11 personnel with confidence to take advantage of running out of 11 personnel against Jacksonville's nickel fronts or nickel defense. They just don't really have the horses to do anything else. So they kind of have to ride with Henry and hope for the best.
I will be interested, how often will the Jaguars still go with their sub look against 12 personnel? Because I know they've kind of done it in the past, especially this last month. And my galaxy brain is just like, how badly do they want to get Antonio Johnson on the field? Because, like, this could be a game where the nickel plays, like, 15 snaps, you know? Like,
yeah.
Trey Herndon, he was impactful the last time these two teams played, but he didn't, you know, play nearly as many snaps as he does, you know, usually. So I do wonder how they will kind of attack that. I think in general, though, this defense combined with, like you said, the way the Titans play offense, they're at least equipped to kind of for a game like that, right? Now they have enough depth in terms of run stoppers. Like they have the pieces to be a better run defense than they've been over like this last month and a half is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I feel like Hamilton last year and what they were expecting this year was that he was going to be kind of like their problem solver defensive tackle when they had two defensive tackles on the field. And they had to like take up like double blocks and kind of take up two gaps. And that just hasn't really panned out. So like, I feel like the scheme is kind of like the scheme. And then like when you have obviously a 3-4 defense and kind of like a numbers advantage in the trenches, that's been helping them out. So I think like they're going to definitely look to get, even if not like a superstar defensive tackle or defensive lineman, I think adding like a real name to that line, if they don't think Ham could be that is a real possibility.
It's such a good bit to design a defense around Devon Hamilton. that's good stuff.
I didn't think it was a terrible idea before he got injured.
To his credit, he was phenomenal last year, you know, as a run stopper. And it definitely does feel like that. It's funny when you say like potentially add like a big like name defensive lineman. Feels like when most teams do that, they're saying, we want to do this so we can play more too high and less, have less guys in the box. Whereas the Jaguars, if we want to do this, so we cannot have three defensive tackles on the field all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And for the nickel position, like, I think just like every game, it's going to depend on like the matchups and the personnel and what happens in the game. And you're going to make in-game kind of decisions based on that. But I wouldn't be surprised if they start out defending 12 personnel in base a lot. And then if the game kind of gets away from the Titans and the Jaguars establish the lead, maybe they'll throw in Antonio Johnson at nickel and do a little less base so that they just see a little bit out of Antonio Johnson. And then they'll also be just defending the pass more in general with a lead. So it'd be probably wiser to have a nickel than a defensive tackle.
Over under sacks from defense. 3.5. What are you taking?
Who?
I think they got 2 last time. Like 4 different guys had like half a sack, I think. Yeah, they got 2 last time, which obviously Will Levis didn't even play the position last time they played.
Yeah.
It was like screen passes and like a fake handoff toss back like to him, etc.
Yeah, I will say the Titans rank 1st in screen usage this year. On 14% of their plays, they run a screen. And Jacksonville ranks bottom 8 in total yards allowed, yards per attempt allowed, and success rate allowed against screens this season. And so that'll definitely be a small thing to watch for, is success on screens for the Titans offense.
Do you have success rate for the Titans offense on screens? So I just feel like the Jaguars are, I agree, have been terrible. I agree with the data. The Jaguars have been terrible against screens this year. I just wonder if the Titans even have anybody who you can like be scared of on a screen.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm trying to look it up. Scott, give me that.
Because the Titans went with a really screen-heavy, game plan last time. But it's not like it was really effective,
Yeah.
Chris Moore had like a 49-yard catch and run, but that wasn't a screen. DeAndre Hopkins had a 43-yard catch. But other than that, their longest plays by players, like 6-yard catch by Tajay Spears, 10-yard catch by Kyle Phillips, 7-yard catch by Wiley, 7-yard catch by Westbrook Akini, 7-yard catch by Quano, 6-yard catch by Henry, 2-yard touchdown catch by Jeffrey Simmons. I forgot that happened.
Yeah, me too. All right, so the Titans rank 1st in screen usage at 14%, and they rank 20th in success rate on screens.
That's so funny.
27%.
I feel like them and the Jags are basically the same in that regard. It's obvious why both teams run a lot of screens.
Yeah, but I think Jacksonville with the speed that they have at receiver, and then Lawrence, if he's able to play, they're well equipped to be able to take advantage, or well enough equipped to take advantage when defenses kind of creep up and play a little bit closer. But the Titans just are not, they can't really take advantage of an opposing defense playing up at the line, playing physical, and playing to stop those screens. So, I think there's a good chance that the Jags are able to stop screens with success the majority of the afternoon. But if Tajay Spears breaks a 60-yard screen, I certainly wouldn't be surprised either.
For sure, for sure. Can I give you my quick bulky ball?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a list of defensive backs with less interceptions this year than Antonio Johnson.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Emmanuel Forbes.
Okay.
Devon Witherspoon. Joey Porter Jr. Patrick Surtain. Tre'Davious White. I think those are the only good people. J.C. Jackson, obviously. DJ Reed. Sean Murphy Bunting, Adoree Jackson.
Okay, you can stop there.
Marlon Humphrey, Marshawn Lattimore, and I almost said Trayvon Diggs by accident before remembering the context.
Yeah. Well, okay, you also just –
would you take any of those players' productions over Antonio Johnson this year? Yes or no?
Yes, because
– no, you got bulky ball.
No. The fault with this is that you last listed all corners. I guess you can
– what does he play?
Max, it's different.
What does he play?
Geno Stone like leads the league in interceptions, and he's a safety too.
He's a safety.
Exactly. So okay. Isn't Johnson.
Should I have done it by slot corners? Would that appease you?
You should do it by safeties, and then I'll be sad.
Antonio Johnson has not played safety this year.
All right, I guess I got Balkyball. Whatever.
I mean, it's clearly semantics, but nonetheless, I feel the Balkyball is vindicated. So basically, though, what I'm saying is you would take one interception over Antonio Johnson's two, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, because one of them was on a Hail Mary game, so it didn't even matter.
Ignore the context.
Okay. See, this is why like the game was already over because the Antonio Johnson was the one that prompted Cupgate, right?
Prompted what?
Cupgate.
Yeah, it was.
But, like that happened with 3 minutes left in the game. Like neither of his interceptions, like actually mattered that much. Okay. So I would take one interception over his two late game interceptions.
To your point about the safeties, he has played 103 snaps at slot corner, 9 snaps at cornerback outside, and 7 snaps at safety this year. Per PFF, who was completely wrong about Trayvon Walker's inside splits. So take it with that grain of salt. But since it works for me this time, I'm going to have to back it up. If you ever reference it,
that's the trick for sure.
Yeah, if it's ever used against me, I will remind people that they were wrong about Trayvon Walker by like 4 snaps, which is a very weird thing to be wrong about. Gus, you got any other stats for us on the defense? Any other takes?
DeAndre Hopkins had 4 catches for 59 yards and 1 touchdown in the last game against the Titans, or against his last game against the Jaguars. Do you think he's going to go over or under 59 yards with Tyson Campbell was not in the previous game?
I'll go over. I think he's going to be the only one to have like more than like 20.
I think he's going to go under. I think he'll have like 40 or 50. Like, I don't think he'll be completely shut out, but I've been looking. It was disappointing when Tyson didn't play in week 11, because as soon as DeAndre signed with the Titans, my first thought was just how fun that matchup is, especially with Tyson being a little bit better against kind of like bigger and physical receivers who don't get a lot of separation. I'm like, DeAndre is kind of the king of like the late push off. That's not so much of a push off that he gets called for OPI. So I would kind of expect Nuke to win in at least one subtle push off. But I think Tyson in general, especially after a pretty good showing last week, is well-equipped to slow down aging DeAndre Hopkins. So I'm definitely looking forward to that matchup.
I feel like Darius and Nuke will be such a stylistic clash that I just want to see them stand next to each other. I think it's more so the take I'm having. It's funny when tall people and not tall people stand next to each other on a football field. That's my take on that. All right. Got anything else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Next.
We'll be right back after this break. All right, Gus. Lock of the week. Let's hear it. Tell me. I want to let you know, I am putting half of my wedding fund on whatever you said a lock of the week is.
All right. I've got not
– Sarah doesn't listen to this. So, you got a lot riding on this.
I've got a couple player props to also say, but my lock of the week is Titans under 19.5 points scored.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think it's – even if the Titans win the game, I think it's likely that they go under this number. In the Week 11 game, the Titans started 3 and out, 1 first down, and then a fumble on the aborted snap, 13-play drive, but then they were sacked out of field goal range and had to punt, 3 and out, end of half, 3 and out. And then they did score touchdowns on their final 2 drives, but by then Jacksonville was up by, like, 3 touchdowns. And so I think, again, like, it's going to be a similar crawl fest to last week against the Panthers and week 11 against the Titans, where Jackson was able to get out to like a 10-point lead in the first quarter. And then
just that's sit.
Pretty much the game. Yeah.
Yeah. Just sit on it. Try to get style points. I definitely agree with you. I think like the Jaguars again, like I said, I think the game plan is don't turn the ball over and that obviously goes for every single game, but I think especially if like this game, and to that point, I think they'll definitely, if they get any kind of lead, they'll kind of just kind of go into cruise control mode.
Yeah, I think both teams will be just relying on their running backs, and like even after a 2 yard run, a 3 yard run, a 1 yard run, a 1 yard run, a 3 yard run, like they're just gonna both keep going back to the well and kind of rely on defense and a couple big runs by their running backs to win this game.
Does that mean you're over on ETN carries?
Of course it means I'm over on ETN carries. I think I took his over rushing and receiving yards total last week, and it still paid off because of that long touchdown run. Yeah. But going back to the well this week, I like ETN over 52.5 rushing yards, Ridley over 51.5 receiving yards. I didn't see any props on Josh Allen sacks. So let's say I'm going over 0.75 Josh Allen sacks if something like that ever pops up in a sports book. I also like the over field goals, even though that's not up, and that's usually like 3-ish. But I think it's going to be a lot of like just get points on the board. And then Engram under 49.5 receiving yards because he had 162 yards in a career game last year against the Titans. And then in two games against the Titans since then, he's had 27 yards and 29 yards. And so he went over his receiving yards prop last week. But I think this week is going to be like similar to DeAndre Hopkins, where he like still has a productive-ish game, but like ends up just below his receiving total.
No, I think that's fair. I definitely feel like this isn't a game where they're spamming targets to him. I think the over on Calvin Ridley yards 51.5 because of that. Like I said, I think Ridley's going to get fed this week. I could see him getting 51.5 yards on like one big catch, and you know, maybe like another catch added in there. Like I don't know if you can bet on this Calvin Ridley catch of 40 yards or more. Go ahead and make that lock of the week. Hey, that's my lock of the week.
Wow. Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley will record one catch of at least 40 or more yards.
All right, that's a good one. My hot take this week that I wrote down is that Calvin Ridley will have at least 90 receiving yards because that's the number that it needs to reach 1,000 on the season.
Ooh. His numbers, honestly, when I looked at them the other day, thought he was a little closer to 1,000. Not gonna lie, that's
also, I think maybe the best stat for Ridley this season is that Sunday will be his 17th start, and it'll be the first time in his career that he starts every game in a season. He did play in all 16 games as a rookie, but he only started about 5, I believe. And so the fact that not that he was coming back from an injury, but nonetheless, it's still impressive to come back from almost 2 years off of football and then playing every game.
Yeah, no, I think he's set a career high in both snaps and snap percentage this year too. Mm-hmm. So in terms of just being available, it's kind of wild. He's been like the Iron Man of the offense. Him and ETN, exactly. Like everybody else on offense, it seems like. It's like it's been ETN, it's been Ridley, and I actually – maybe take out ETN because there's been a few games where he's – so it's been, what, Ridley and Luke Fortner. Fortner's played every single snap, dude.
The only other one I was going to add was Evan Engram. I don't feel like he hasn't been injured this year.
I want to say there was
– Brenton Strange hurt his foot, but that was – like I don't know if Farrell's gotten hurt either. Maybe in the beginning of the year, but –
I thought you were about to say Brenton was one of the Iron Men too. That would have been a good take. All right, Gus. Predictions. What you got for me?
I was going to add a long time ago when you were talking about how Peterson sort of owns Vrabel. Just I had written down that he's 3-0 since last year with a plus 38 point differential. And so there was – last year's Week 18 game was a 4-point win, but the other two games haven't really been close. And so I think it's going to be 20-13 Jaguars.
Okay.
23-13. Did I say 20-13?
Yeah. 23-13. Regardless of who starts the quarterback, that's your call?
Yeah. Last week I was all over the place. And I thought the Jags were going to get crushed if they didn't have Trevor, and that did not happen. So this week, regardless of who's at quarterback, I think it's a low scoring but still double-digit point win for the Jags.
Yeah, I'll go Jags 20, Titans 13. Yeah, Jags 20, Titans 13. That's I just feel like the Jags, for all of their issues, for all of the ways that they have learned how to beat themselves, I feel like they more or less haven't really been a letdown against bad teams this year. You know, like even the Bengals lost. The Bengals are a better team with Jake Browning at the helm right now than what the Titans have been this year. You know, like when it comes to the bad teams the Jags have played this year, the Titans, the Panthers, the Falcons, you know, that kind of scenarios, I think the Jags are more or less taking care of business. I agree with you. I think they go conservative. They don't put the ball in harm's way very much. They pray that Etienne breaks open a long run sooner and later. Maybe they go for a home run like early in the game, try to give them that lead that they can just sit on. And I think the defense more or less has a, you know, overly, you know, positive performance. So we're both picking them to win, which, I mean, how disastrous of a loss would that be if they lose?
Very disastrous.
Blow it up.
There's like a bigger chance than not of there being like some kind of power struggle in the building in the summer if they lose against Tennessee.
Yeah, so they lose. Would you say if you lost? Yeah, so if they lost, missed the playoffs, would you say if you were the one calling shots that, okay, something needs to be blown up, kind of changed?
Yeah, and I don't know if something will be blown up in the terms of like the head coach or the general manager being gone, but I think like at the very least, like someone on the coaching staff is going to get fired, or there's going to be some kind of shakeup, even if it's not major, like something will happen.
That's fair. Well, on that happy note, we both picked in the win, so we'll see what happens. Obviously, yeah. A big game. I don't think the Titans are going to just roll over and play dead, even though I do think that they're obviously a bad team. Gus, you got anything else to kind of send us out in the last regular season preview podcast of the year?
Yeah, I have a little bit more of an uplifting note to end on. One more hot take. Darius Williams will get an interception off Ryan Tannehill to secure an all-pro nod. I thought that he was the biggest snub out of any Jaguars who weren't like a non-alternate pro bowler. So besides Ross Matisic and Josh Allen, I thought like Darius Williams was the most deserving of a pro bowl nod. Over, I mean, that's probably a pretty hot take over Evan Engram, because he definitely deserved it too. But mostly like over a Foye Oluokun and
ETN.
Yeah. Because like ETN, like he had a Pro Bowl caliber season maybe, but like he's definitely like dropped off in the past month. And like there's definitely plenty of recency bias in the Pro Bowl voting and awards.
Yeah.
But like with all that said, like I think Foye should like definitely get strong consideration for an all pro nod, but as many people have pointed out in Jags Twitter this week, the all pros are what really matters, because Pro Bowls are kind of popularity contests.
Yeah, that's fair. Pro Bowls to me, like, is definitely like something that it makes sense to poke fun at and say, why does this matter? But my retort is always, every player I've ever talked to, it matters to them. Like, they're not playing for a Pro Bowl. You know, like Josh Allen obviously said, he hopes that he can't even go to the Pro Bowl. You know, like he'll be busy. But it does, like, even financially, it matters now. Like, you get, if you're a first-round pick and you make the Pro Bowl as a non-alternate, you get escalators in your fifth-year option, which does not apply to the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence was an alternate last year, alternate again this year. But, like, I think, like, Pat Surtain and Sauce Gardner, like, their fifth-year options are both going to be, like, a couple million dollars, like more than they would have been otherwise. So it definitely does matter. Gus, got anything else for us, my friend?
No, I'll see you for either the first postseason or the first offseason pod on Monday.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us in Nashville. Don't forget, you've been bulky bold. We'll be back Monday or Tuesday. Thank you guys.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.